You know what I'm still thinking about? Steve Alexander just said that about one third of Americans have two tattoos, and 20% of us have more than one. I think those were the stats.
Yeah, one third say they have one, and about 22% say they have more than one.
I think more than one third.
Yeah. I think more women have tattoos than men.
Interesting. I still think that the number would be higher than that, but maybe I'm just thinking of younger people. My parents don't have tattoos, and they're not going to get any anytime soon. I'll bet as we age out, that percent is going to go higher, unless this is just a trend that is peaking. But I'm not sure that it is. That's a fascinating stat to me, and I'd like to see the demographics on that by age. The percentage of people between the age of 12 and 50, I'll bet more than 50% of them have tattoos.
Well, I have some. People under 30 are more likely to have a tattoo, 41% of the people under 30. People 65 and older, 13%
have
tattoos.
And then there's always the people who say they have twos and people who haven't told their parents yet. It's 12. I've been to that movie. It's 12:12 on WGN. Farron Dogs has a bunch of tattoos. How many tattoos do you have, Farron?
You know, I have to tell you, I do not qualify as having a tattoo. Not even a henna tattoo. So I'm not going to go down that road.
You are a wealth advisor and founder and CEO at Harrison Wallace Financial Group. Maybe people would judge you differently if you had some sort of elaborate, crazy thing, and they go, ah, maybe this isn't a guy I want to help me with my financial decisions.
Right, like $100 bill on my neck or something like that.
Yeah, a bunch of Benjamins on your biceps.
That'd be great.
And then I'd say, who's Benjamin? It's funny, though. I had a medical procedure today, just a little cancer was taken off my hand, no big deal. Anyway, the woman that was doing it had a bunch of elaborate tattoos on her arms, and I think you're a highly educated person operating in a very personal space here. I didn't have a problem with it, but I think it's, put it this way, not so easy to predict anymore who will or will not get a tattoo. They're not all malcontents necessarily or whatever you once imagined the answer to that. But we digress. Let's talk about the stock market. What's your sort of score for how we're doing these days, Farron?
Well, I think, you know, I'm not disappointed in how the market has kind of retraced here. I think that that's healthy for the market. Some of those technology stocks we talked about last time, you know, they were just going straight up, and that is just not sustainable. And so I think when we started to see the Treasury rates, you know, creep up to that 4.3, which is the highest, I believe, in about 16, 17 years, I think that a lot of people decided, you know, we may be in this long-term interest rate or high interest rate environment for longer. So I'm going to take a little bit of my profit off the table. And so I think that's why we've seen some pullback in especially some of those big tech names that have been up so much. So I kind of look at these as, you know, if you're an investor and a dollar cost averager, these are good things. And I don't see it as a black cloud up there for the long term. But I think in the short term, we're going to continue to see this volatility.
Still having a good year, though, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's been a really good year. People have enjoyed some bounce back from a tough 2022. When I'm doing my client reviews, we're all smiling again. And, you know, it's a really good time to reassess your portfolio and say, hey, I've actually got some good recovery in some of these things. Should I take some off the table just to get back into my tolerance for risk?
Well, that's an interesting point. You're not the first person to broach that subject. So now that we have recovered, maybe not to where we once were, we haven't eclipsed the all-time highs, but ironically, now that you feel like you're getting back to the starting line, you might want to pull back a little bit because you think the market's going to have a correction. Are you on page with that?
I don't know if the market as a whole will have a quote correction. I think we've already seen some of those larger tech stocks. They're already in correction territory, some of them. And, you know, to be able to pick up some of these at 10% cheaper than what they were, you know, 2 weeks ago, I think is a reasonable thing to consider, you know, again, dollar cost averaging in. But I don't see the broad market going into a correction, if you will, just because the rally itself has not been that broad based. You know, it's been a fairly thin rally. It's just that those stocks that are so heavily weighted, in the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ, that it gives a appearance that it's, you know, a little more broad-based than what it has been.
Hey, Farron, can I just bug you with a couple of quick notes from our listeners about tattoos?
Sure, absolutely. I'd love it.
Hey, John Williams, I'm 68. I got my first tattoo 2 weeks ago. Hey, John Williams, my parents are 70. They live in Arizona. Their pastor is loaded with tattoos at the large church. I think people have moved on from tats as a negative impression. I completely agree with that. I think that was the point I was trying to make. I may not have done that well. And finally, John, my daughter's got a full sleeve on her arm. She has over 100 tattoos in total, but not on her neck or face. Highly educated with an MBA and a master's in social work. She's beautiful, and she gets stares from the older generation and lots of interest from the younger generation. So I suppose that's the way that goes. Hey,
I bet it would.
Farron, you and I were talking about that a moment ago. Pardon me for the distraction. I saw something from the Atlanta Fed, I think it was, saying that they think the third quarter, the economy is going to grow at almost 6%. What's your take on that?
Well, I think we are seeing, and I think a little bit of this correction, well, I don't want to call it correction, but pullback here in the market has been because we're actually seeing some pretty strong data continue to come out. You know, this economy shows a lot of resilience despite the aggressive moves of the Fed over the last 18 months. And, you know, I think that, you know, we could, I think six is a little bit high, but I do think we're going to be a little bit higher than, you know, the average has been so far this year. So I think that's, again, why the Fed is going to have its finger on the pulse of what's really going on. My personal opinion is I don't think they'll do anything in September.
Really?
Because I do believe that a lot of the things they look at are lagging indicators. And so I do believe they're going to wait a couple of cycles to see really what's this shaking out. But if they continue to get, you know, inflationary data, it's unfortunate that it almost seems like they feel like they have to crush an economy to stem inflation. And I don't mean that, you know, so negatively, but, you know, that is obviously one way to slow things down is to continue to raise. But I would say that, you know, that late October, early November meeting, they may have to do another bump up if we continue to see this climbing data.
But inflation is coming down. It's not 7%. It's not 9% now. It's, what is it, 3%?
It is 3%, but the core is still a little bit higher. And I think that the things that are really impacting the average household are the things they always strip out of core, you know, food and energy, which are two things that we're always using. And we have seen, you know, we've seen gas prices increase quite a bit. I talked to my wife and she goes to the grocery store and, yeah, eggs have come back down to basically pre-pandemic levels. But some of those other produce items are still quite pricey. And it's just you're not getting the same basket of goods that you used to. And then you double that or you put on top of that higher interest rates on if you buy a car, if you did buy a home, you know, you're paying now 7%, whereas 24 months ago, you were maybe at 2.75, 3%. So it's hitting the pocketbook. There's no doubt. Inflation and higher rates.
I was surprised to hear that. I mean, I didn't know that the interest rates on a 30-year fixed were at 7 and that was the highest it's been in 30 years. What does the Fed do about that?
Well, that's the thing. And I think what the Fed is looking at, and, you know, I started in this business a little over 30 years ago, and interest rates were, you know, mortgage rates were at 8%. CD rates were at 6, 7%. But the markets still were producing good returns, you know, so we were able to go to a more traditional type of allocation with especially our retired clients. You're actually getting a reasonable rate of interest on your fixed assets, but yet we can still go for some growth in the market, you know, in the stock market. And, you know, we've been so desensitized to that, you know, and have enjoyed these 0% interest rates for so long that people are like, the sky is falling because interest rates are what they are. And the reality is, you know, those two have coexisted in the past, higher rates and good equity returns. And, you know, maybe it's a little bit of a return to normalcy, to be honest.
Well, I'd sure be anxious for some of those people to get out of their houses that feel trapped by the interest rate they're in. And that's not just for the potential buyers, but I'll bet there are some people who would like to move, but they just can't right now.
Right. Yeah, we're seeing that. You know, they're saying that sellers, you know, even a year ago, were willing to sell and take advantage of these higher home prices that they would get. But now the trick is, where do they go? You know, they're maybe in a mortgage that's at 4%. Now, if they do move, now they have to borrow at 7%. So that is not attractive anymore. So that, you know, that tightens up the supply of houses as well, which keeps prices of houses high.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's a little bit of a, you know, just circular there. And I think it's just going to be a matter of, you know, the home builders getting more and more supply on the market to be able to loosen that up a little bit. And that may take some time.
Yeah, well, that's what my friend David Hochberg said. He doesn't see it. He's not on the builder side, but he's on the mortgage side, and he just doesn't see this fixing itself anytime soon.
Yeah, I think we're going to see some really soft home sales, you know, as far as, you know, total home sales volume for this coming year. I just don't see we're going to have a lot of movement. You know, we're starting to see it slow down a lot of places.
How are retail sales doing?
Retail sales have been unexpectedly strong. You know, the consumer, again, is being pretty resilient in wake of these, you know, in wake of inflation and rising rates. But my concern is that the credit card debt is starting to climb. And I do believe a lot of people, yeah, they're still out there buying, but they are financing it on a credit card more than what they were 2 and 3 years ago. And taking longer to pay that credit card off and paying really high interest rates on those credit cards. So we're unfortunately starting to see those balances rise, and we're also starting to see defaults on those credit cards rise as well. So
let me ask you this, because what we always talk about when we talk about, well, who's manipulating the economy, what is going to be done about any of these things? Some of them are good, some of them are bad, some of them are both. But it's the Fed, and they just got that one lever. But I suppose the Congress or the administration could be doing something, too, to manage the economy to get us where we want to be. Do you have some prescription for the Biden administration or the Pritzker administration? Is there something that can be done to get us to where we want to go?
Sure. Yeah, that's a great question. And I think, you know, energy is obviously the football here, right? And everyone, we obviously want to move to cleaner energy. I don't think anyone's opposed to having clean energy. But when we tightened up our energy supply here a couple of years ago, you think of energy as being used for everything. Energy is used in, you know, transportation. And the higher those energy costs are for the transport business, the more that filters down to the consumer. And so if there were a way for us to, you know, loosen up some of that energy supply, even if it's short term, to give a little bit of relief to the end user and the consumer, I think that would be a huge benefit. I think we'd start to see inflation come down even more and a lot quicker if we could, you know, start using some of our own energy sources again, even if it's short term. And I don't even, you know, it's not a political thing. It's just the reality that if you're using your own resources, you're not overpaying some other country or some other entity for the product that you use a lot of.
I suppose you could also, though, do rebates on electric cars or solar panels. I mean, you could sort of jumpstart or move those industries along quicker, right? I mean, it's energy. Those are energy sources.
Yeah.
Is that helpful or not sufficiently so?
You know, it's interesting because I don't know if the EV market is somewhat, you know, experiencing a bit of a plateau, but I know Ford came out a couple weeks ago indicating that there is just not as much interest. And I don't think it's because people just don't want to buy them. I think the concern is, as a society, we are so used to fast mobility. You know, like if you're doing a road trip, you know, you pull into the gas station, mm-hmm. you fill up, and you're back on the road in 10 minutes. They're like, what? I have to wait 45 minutes to an hour to recharge my car, right? And it's just a different mindset. And until people change their paradigm about, you know, how they're going to have to plan ahead for this type of thing, you know, I think we may see a little bit of a plateau in that EV market. Hmm. The other thing is, I don't really believe that our charging stations, we just don't have the infrastructure set up for this yet, to have all of these EVs on the road, because there's just not enough charging stations overall.
That's fair.
And if that catches up, that'd be great.
That's Farron Dawgs, wealth advisor and founder over at Harrison Wallace Financial. HarrisonWallace.com is his website. Farron, we'll catch up another day. Always nice to talk to you. Thanks for helping us out.
Thanks, John. I appreciate it. Great to be with you.
Maybe this is good for students. It's probably going to be good for all of us. Well, it's certainly good for students. We're talking with Carl Prouty from Apt Technology, or Apt Electronics. He's the technologist over there at ABT. ABT.com is their website. And if the kids are going away to school, maybe they need a laptop. Maybe you need a new laptop. Let's start there, Carl. Can you catch me up on price and technology in laptops?
Yes, most definitely. Apple normally gets top billing, but we actually have an LG Gram laptop. So LG is the brand, and they developed this Gram line of laptops to be super portable. They're extremely light. It's only 2.5 pounds. So if you're carrying it around in your backpack all day, it's not going to wear out your shoulder or anything. They've got a super long battery life, too. And they're on sale for $900. So it's a nice way to get a really great laptop for a much better price. These are normally $1,200, so it's on sale right now for a great deal.
But the OS is not Apple technology then, right?
It's not Apple technology. It's going to run on Windows, but that's still going to be something that you can use for everything. A lot of kids, I just dropped my daughter off for her sophomore year on Monday, and a lot of them use just the Google interface, which is going to be good on really just about any laptop, so you can access your documents from anywhere.
I use both platforms every day. I wonder if people are so married to one that's maybe not as important a factor as it used to be. You know, there was the Apple family, and boy, they only wanted to do Apple. But Windows is still so pervasive that I suppose people are pretty fluent in both systems, right?
Yeah, that's what I find. It is hard. So I myself, I have an iPhone and I have a MacBook Air at home. So it is, once you're into that ecosystem, it's easier when you stick to the same brand, but there's plenty of people out there that aren't part of that ecosystem. So using a Windows-based computer is going to be great.
And aside from the cost and the lightweight, the convenience, et cetera, is LG considered, I've seen that brand a million times, is that considered medium, low, high grade? Is that good technology? Is that a good product?
Oh, they're fantastic technology. Yeah, they've been doing laptops for a little while now, and they're probably most well known for their appliances and their televisions, but their laptops have been terrific. We see them at the Consumer Electronics Show every year, and they're always extremely innovative and just easy to use, and they always have great technology built in.
You like LG TVs too? I'm sure you got every brand there. What's what's the big seller at Apt, just if I was buying a flat screen TV?
We do a lot of their OLED TVs, so it's this organic light emitting diode for the, you know, to say it in a techie way, but phenomenal picture on those things. If you're looking for the best kind of best color quality, best black levels, you can't really go wrong with that.
In the dorm room, small refrigerator, what have you got?
Mm-hmm. So Avanti makes one. It's $189, so it's on the higher side for the small refrigerators, but this one in particular, we sell one that doesn't have a freezer section built into it, which is kind of nice, because when you're dealing with a really small fridge, sometimes having that tiny freezer just takes up space that you could use for more important things, just keeping something cool rather than keeping something frozen. But what's nice about this one is that it doesn't have the typical compressor built into it, so they're really quiet. So you're not going to be disturbing your roommates while they're trying to sleep. You're not going to be disturbing yourself while you're trying to study. So it's a really it's a nice technology to have built into to that refrigerator.
I saw one of the things you're promoting is the Anker Power Bank wall charger for $99. What is that? Why $99? Yeah.
Well, so it's basically a portable power bank. So everyone's got their phone on them all the time. Kids in college are going to have their tablet or their laptop on them. So it's good to have something that you can that's easy to access to charge everything up to make sure you're not running out of battery. And the nice part about this one is that it actually has a wall plug built into it. So when you do go back to your dorm room or back to your apartment or wherever, you can plug it in and use it as a USB hub. So now you can plug three different things into it and charge those all up while you're charging the battery inside of the device itself. So it becomes a really multi-purpose option.
Coffee maker.
Mm-hmm. Very important for...
What do you got there?
So we carry a model from Technivorm, and it's just a single cup coffee maker. I personally own one of these, and the coffee tastes amazing coming out of it. It's not those little pod style coffee makers. You're actually using ground coffee, but it makes a cup at a time. So it's really perfect for you know, right before class or before you have an exam as a little pick me up to kind of get you going.
I drink Keurig coffee all day long and I don't like it at all. Because I don't know, maybe it's the pods, maybe it's just such a small serving. I don't feel like I get a rich full coffee blend or flavor, but I'm kind of intrigued by what you just said. I'd be able to take the coffee grounds I buy at the store, mm-hmm. pour them in there, and it would make me a little cup. Is that what you're saying?
It just makes a single cup. It makes it at the perfect temperature, so it tastes so good. It's almost like a pour over coffee. If you ever do a pour over, it mm-hmm. almost has a similar flavor to something like that, where it's going to be stronger. And just you kind of get the most out of your coffee grind.
You mean like
that way.
A French press, that sort of thing?
Yeah, kind of. It's not quite as bold as a French press, but it's better than drip coffee mm-hmm. and better than the pot.
We were kind of kidding earlier about the Jetson Bolt electric bike for getting around campus. I said we used to get 10 speeds, but I suppose those electric bikes are all the rage these days, right?
Oh, they're great, and they've gotten this Jetson Bolt is such a compact size that it really is. You could keep it in a dorm room. It's so small, and having a 15-mile range is fantastic. Generally, as a college student, you're probably not going to be going 15 miles a day, so you can get a full day's use out of it and not wear yourself out walking from building to building.
And I see those everywhere. I've never been on one. You can pedal it, too, without using the electric motor, or are you always using the electric motor?
So they make a version that you can pedal, and they make a version that is, it's almost like a scooter with a seat on it. So you can do either way. The one that with the pedals is a little bit more expensive. The one that's kind of more like a scooter is only $3.99, so it's a very reasonable price. And they're quick to charge. They have lights built into them, so you can use it in the dark if you need to. They're really handy to have.
I know a lot of the kids are off already. I see here for last-minute orders before you head off to college, APT offers same-day delivery. This is great for kids going to Loyola, DePaul, Northwestern in the area, maybe Northern as well. You can use APT's free same-day delivery, and, of course, they ship nationwide at abt.com. This makes me want to get some of this stuff myself, Carl. Thanks for the help.
Thanks so much for having me.
The technologist at APT is Carl Prouty. Okay, let's update you then on more business news. Here's Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Some of the biggest hotels in Chicago have struck a deal with their unions to avert a potential strike. Members of Unite Here Local 1 have ratified a new 3-year contract just 2 weeks before the previous labor agreement was set to expire. The union represents workers at nearly 24 hotels operated by big chains like Marriott, Hilton, and Hyatt. Among other things, the new contract ups the minimum wage for non-tipped workers, protects health coverage, and strengthens pensions. The job market in Illinois has topped its pre-pandemic level with a new record of non-farm positions in July. The state reports 6.15 million positions and an unemployment rate steady at 4%. The jobless rate is at the lowest level since the COVID pandemic began. The number of people employed in the private sector is also at a record high. The number of non-farm payroll jobs is about 8,000 higher than January of 2020. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Okay, now Steve Alexander, the business of food, please.
Thank you, and it's a Mr. Fizz Friday, and our gardening guru Jim Fizzell has your lawn on his mind.
Right, we need to redo lawns. The target date is middle of August, and that's where we are.
Well, yes, we are. And before we get into all of the work you need to do to bring your lawn back to life, let's thank the Chevy Silverado HD for sponsoring us. Experience your life in HD. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com. Take it away, Mr. Fizz.
Well, Steve, the first thing you need to do in making lawn repairs is to check the amount of thatch you have. If you have over a half inch of thatch, the best thing to do is to core aerify that. That means using a machine that punches a hole in the lawn every 2 inches, 36 holes per square feet. A lot of lawn care companies have core aerifying machines that don't make holes that close together. You're wasting your time if you don't make 36 holes per square feet. Now, if you have bad spots only in the yard where maybe you got some disease problems or the dog killed it up, scratch these areas up or else dig the duff out and fill with soil from elsewhere in the yard. Then scatter seed in those spots and gently rake it in. If these spots are fairly large, you might consider throwing some straw over them just so once they get wet, they don't dry out immediately when the sun shines. To do a complete renovation at this time of year, you need to get rid of the perennial weeds by spraying with something like glyphosate, which will kill everything. Wait 5 days, mow short, then you can slit seed in two different directions. In other words, you need to almost have it to a point where the seed can get to the soil one way or another.
It isn't too hot to seed right now?
No, it's not too hot. The important thing is keeping it wet. Or if you're going to sod, it's time to strip off the old lawn after you've killed everything off. Work up a seed bed, level anything that needs to be leveled, and put down sod. Be sure it's fresh-grown sod of the same kind of soil as what you have in your yard. If you get it started in the next week or so, you'll have good, strong grass by the time frost begins, and by next spring, you'll find that your lawn is in good shape.
Mr. Fizz, Jim Fizzell, our gardening guru. From the farm to your belly, oh, we've got a trifecta today. It's National Fajita Day. It is National Ice Cream Pie Day. And to wash it all down, it's National Pinot Noir Day. I'm Steve Alexander, and that's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Just talking to Carl Prouty over at Apt about the technology the kids need when they get back to school. Too bad he doesn't have a rack of teachers there because they could use those too. The CEO of Golden Apple Foundation is Alicia Winkler. Alicia, you're on WGN. Thanks for joining us.
Good afternoon. Thank you so much for having me.
You are addressing this teacher shortage, huh?
We sure are. Golden Apple Foundation is proud to be a material solution to the teacher shortage in the state of Illinois. We presently are in 80 counties in Illinois with active teachers teaching and expect to be in 90% of the counties of Illinois over the next couple of years. We address the shortage through two of our programs where we prepare undergrads to be teachers and provide intensive support and mentoring in their first years of teaching. And we also have a program for career changers called our Accelerators Program to engage people who are interested in education but maybe didn't choose that pathway when they were getting their bachelor's degree.
Is this a post-pandemic phenomenon or were you always busy?
So we've been busy for a number of years. We actually have served the state of Illinois for over 30 years. However, the problem, unfortunately, has intensified in recent years, as many people know and understand. Multiple sources in the news media have reported on it. But it's a complex problem that requires a lot of solutions, a lot of high-quality organizations like Golden Apple Foundation working together to solve this problem.
I understand the traditional route. I go to college, I get a teacher certificate, I teach at a school. Talk to me a little bit about these transitional teachers.
So, you know, we do pursue a traditional path through our scholars program, but we provide supplemental guidance and development, things that you might not always expect to get in a traditional university preparation program. Things like trauma-informed training provided by Lurie Center for Childhood Resiliency, personalized learning, making certain that as a brand new teacher who might be engaging with students who unfortunately have experienced trauma, that we can identify the signs of that trauma, even when a young person can't tell you what's happened yet or doesn't have the words for it, and can provide the proper resources to get that young person in a place where they can grow and excel and achieve their full potential. On the accelerators front, that's a different program. That program is a little bit shorter in length. It's a post-baccalaureate program, 15 months concurrent licensure and residency, also working, though, with university partners to achieve that licensure and those degrees, just doing so in a very intensive in-residence experience where we engage our award-winning master teachers throughout the state of Illinois in preparing, instructing, coaching, and mentoring those future to-be teachers and those teachers in their early years when sometimes that teaching profession can be pretty lonely when you're in your first or second year experiencing some hurdles and challenges. And we provide the peer relationships and the mentoring professionals to ensure that you're able to stay in that profession and be highly effective.
How old are some of these people leaving one career? You know, maybe I've been in the business and now I'm 40, 50, 60. How old can a person be and do the accelerated program to go become a teacher?
There are no age limits. That's the great news. So we see folks of all age ranges. We have retired military professionals. We have a retired MBA player who's engaging with us as a teacher. So it's never too late. If your passion is there and you have an interest and really want to engage in preparing yourself well to be a skilled instructor, to reach those students, never too late to help other people achieve their dreams.
So how do they reach out to you? To get this guidance or support, what do I do?
So very simply, you can go online to our website at www.goldenapple.org. You'll see links to both of our programs there, our Scholars Program and our Accelerators Program. It'll be a few more weeks until we launch our Scholars application for this year. That's the program for seniors in high school through sophomores in college. But for our Accelerators Program, that application actually opened 48 hours ago, so folks can apply. You'll see some language there that references Southern, Central, and Western Illinois, because that's where we've had that program in the past few years. But we are strongly considering expanding it to the Chicagoland area, so we are encouraging anybody who lives in the state of Illinois without an education bachelor's, but a bachelor's degree obtained, to an interest in being a career education professional, to please apply. And we do have a rigorous selection process because we want to make sure that ultimately those K-12 students we serve are getting the best chance at achieving their dreams.
I got to go, but one last quick question. Then do you help me get a job?
We absolutely do. We work with all of our program participants on placement. And I'd like to say a couple of things about our statistics there. We see over 97% of our licensed teachers going into teaching throughout the state of Illinois, and we retain 82% of those teachers for five or more years.
Wow.
Which far surpasses benchmarks you'll see at state and national levels.
I'm glad to hear that, because I thought, yeah, some people said, yeah, I can do that. I can teach those damn kids. And then they get out there and go, whoa! And if you have that sort of retention rate, it tells me you're picking the right people and you're doing something right. GoldenApple.org, GoldenApple.org. Alicia, let's check in again, but thank you for the information.
Thank you so much for the opportunity.
The CEO of that organization, Alicia Winkler, goldenapple.org.